Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
The City Council of Hamilton has begun the early days of budget talks and dealing with some budgets and some money that we will be looking at down the road. What we heard a number of days ago, a number of weeks ago, was from the head of finances for the city, Mike Zagarek, was that the city may be looking at a 6.9% tax increase. That's the starting one. Now, that rarely, if ever, happens. Council always finds ways to whittle it down, but I want to get into that in just a second with my first guest today. He is now a city council veteran. He's only in his second term and through 2 weeks in, but he is a city council veteran, Ward 8 Councillor John Paul Danko. How are you? Thanks for doing this today.
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, as I say, I mean, now that you are one of the few people who knows what's going on at council, because everyone else is so fresh and so new that, you're the old guy now. You're the old guard.
I'll take that. I think we have some really strategic thinkers on council, and you know they're really challenging the status quo. It's really exciting, actually.
Before we get to the tax part, there was a tweet that you put out a few minutes ago. I wanted to ask you about this one. Hamilton City Council voted to formally request our two local Ontario PC Party MPPs, Donna Skelly and Neil Lumsden, to appear before council to publicly answer questions about the disastrous impact of Bill 23 and related issues. Will they have the courage to answer to taxpayers? That was a tweet that went out. There was another one that followed. It's a really interesting position that council has created here or had asked, but is there any value to it? The only reason I ask that is because they are two people who are doing the bidding of their party leadership. Is it fair to put them on the spot for decisions that aren't theirs?
Absolutely. They were elected by the taxpayers of the city of Hamilton, and they need to answer to those taxpayers that they represent. They are our provincial representatives at Queen's Park, and MPP Skelly and MPP Lumsden really need to speak up about, you know, the impacts of Bill 23. This is a massive tax from the Doug Ford government that is going to impact City of Hamilton taxpayers, because we will be subsidizing developer profits through municipal tax property taxpayers. That's not fair, and they need to answer to that.
When I didn't see this vote. Was this vote today that was taken?
This was today at council, yes.
Okay. All right. And what would be the expectation? I mean, do you expect that you're going to have them in front of council?
Well, I would hope that they would have the courage to attend council and answer questions in a public forum. There is precedent from this. MPPs have delegated in front of council before. And as I said, they were elected by their representatives. They both represent areas that have significant rural properties and farms. And I think, you know, they owe us taxpayers and council some answers as to why do they want to pave over farms for sprawl development? Why do they want to increase City of Hamilton taxpayers' taxes? Why do they want to dismantle rent control and environmental controls? And, you know, these are really serious issues that we are facing as a municipality, and we're not getting the answers that we need from the Premier and from Minister Clark. And we expect better, I think, from our local representatives.
We'll follow up on that one for sure once we hear anything about that. But let's talk a little bit. That came up just as I was coming on the air, so that was I thought I'd bring that up. But I did want to talk to you. It's a good segue, because I did want to talk to you about taxes, because you are beginning the process of going through this. And we did hear a bit of a frightening number from Mike Zagarek a few weeks ago. And you now point out that, you know what, these development charges could add to the taxes. Are Hamilton taxpayers, should they be getting ready to be walloped with a big tax increase?
I think, you know, as in your own household, we've seen huge increases in cost of living for residents. We know that City Hamilton taxpayers and residents are really challenged when they go to the grocery store, when they fill up the car. The income that they have does not go as far as it had, and there's many reasons for that. So at the city, we're facing very much similar challenges in the services and the goods that we need in order to provide the services that we provide as a city. So when we're putting out contracts, when we're buying things like road salt or chemicals to treat the water, all the costs for these things have gone up astronomically in the last couple of years. So yes, we are definitely facing a very serious tax impact this year. And I think as a council, we're looking at every opportunity that we have to keep that as manageable as possible, understanding that the ability to pay by Hamilton taxpayers has been severely impacted in the last few years.
And I think a lot of people, Councillor, I think a lot of people, probably most people, I think everybody probably could hear what you're saying and say, yeah, I get that we have to buy these chemicals and it costs more, so the city's going to have to pay more, going to have to find more money, and that seems to always come down to tax dollars. That being said, though, should that not mean that councillors are looking, are not necessarily adding to the costs? That programs or other ideas that may be really good ideas maybe have to be put off for a while rather than adding them to the pile of things that we have to spend on?
Absolutely. And I think we're in a really interesting time right now when we're talking about taxes and budgets in the city of Hamilton, because for years and years, we have kind of gone about things the opposite way, where we've set a budget and then we've tried to figure out what we can do within that budget. Now we're looking at more of a needs-based budget. So when you're talking about needs and wants, we're really trying to assess in a much more strategic way about what it is that we really need to do as a city, what are the core services that we need to deliver, and how can we best strategically do that, and have an honest conversation about, you know, what is actually required to do that. So if you look at something like the capital budget, which has about a $200 million annual deficit, that's something that, you know, we need to be honest about how much it's going to actually cost to take care of our roads and infrastructure in a way that is open and transparent as possible, that there are really big needs out there that we need to address as a city, along with a lot of the social issues that we've been facing through COVID and as a result of that with homelessness and housing affordability. There's some really big, overarching issues that we face as a city, that the services that we provide are critical in order for residents to have a good quality of life.
And once again, I mean, with things like capital, like we just had the thing with the sewer, and now we're going to have all the sewers explored and everything. And I think most people understand you need to have the sewers that don't leak or don't explode or whatever else. All that kind of stuff, I get. I'm thinking more of in the last few days, we've had recommendations or at least inquiries into whether, okay, HSR rides should be free for kids, or whether staff budgets should be going up, or, you know, we just hired a new person for environment, $200,000 salary. Are these the times to be adding those kinds of things, or should we be looking to be much more, for lack of a better word, tight with our money, because we know there's so much other spending to do elsewhere?
Honestly, I think our city, Hamilton, is very, for lack of a better phrase, tight with our money. We are a very lean municipality. There's not a lot of fat to be trimmed, and the fat that could be trimmed has been trimmed a long time ago. So, you know, just in my experience with at the city, that it is very efficient. Now, that's not to say there's not more efficiencies that can be found. Of course, there are. But again, it's kind of identifying the priorities that of certain goods and services that our residents, really need for their quality of life, and being able to provide those in an efficient way. And yes, there are some programs that are maybe more of a want than a need. And that's what we're going through with a needs-based budget, is to really identify, through asset management and through identifying, through consultation, those services that are critical for our residents.
Ward 8 Councillor John Paul Danka. We'll have lots more to talk about this over the next number of months as the budget process goes along. But I really appreciate you taking a few minutes today. Thank you for this.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Earlier in the show today, I was talking about how I was down at the Hamilton Bulldogs game this morning. This morning they had a game. It was a school day game. They had about 8,700 school kids in the arena for the game. And it was unusual, and I'll tell you why, because probably all this year, that was their 26th game, I think, of the season. There probably have not been five fights all season. Today, there were five fights in one game, but it's unusual anymore to see a lot of fighting in hockey. Professional hockey, junior hockey, whatever. It's just, it's not nearly the part of the game that it once was. I mean, back in the 1970s, if you watched hockey, Broad Street Bullies, Philadelphia Flyers, bad, big bad Bruins, Montreal Canadiens had a bunch of guys. You could go down the list, Tiger Williams with the Leafs, whoever. Fighting was every single game. Now, there's a very good chance if you go to a hockey game these days that there will not be a fight. Probably a considerably better chance than actually seeing a fight. Here's the thing, though. There are still people who love a good hockey fight. I know some of you are saying that's gross. No, no, it's part of what hockey was. It's part of what people grew up watching, and some people say they really like it. So is there a way that you could be sure that if you go to the rink that you could see a fight? Well, in fact, yes, there is. There is a new organization. Well, it's not brand new. It's new enough that is presenting nothing but hockey fights. It is kind of like boxing or mixed martial arts or something, but on skates, and people go, and that's what they get. And there is one, well, maybe the hub, I don't know if you want to say the hub right now, is in Wyoming. Brian Peterson is a financial advisor, but he's also the Wyoming MMA commissioner who is behind a new sport, we'll call it, a sport of hockey fighting. You're joining us now. Brian, how are you today?
Good, my friend. Thank you for having me on today. It's wonderful.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you doing this because I saw a story about this and I thought, you know, I am probably not surprised if I really think about it that someone has come up with this as a thing to do because there are, you know, some people may hate this, but there are still a lot of people who love a good hockey fight.
You know, this was actually brought forward by industry of people looking for just that. I would liken it to Wyoming was the first state in North America to regulate and sanction bare-knuckle boxing. And it was legal before that. We had 37 fights in 5 years that were bare-knuckle boxing. But the folks who were participating weren't necessarily recognized for what happened because if a sanctioning body doesn't approve of it and it doesn't have standardized rules, then it didn't really happen. So now all the money you put into it, all of the training you put into it, all of the effort, the time, counts for nothing because it's not a recognized fight. So we then had industry come to us and said, will you please sanction this? We want to be looked at as for what we are, and that's an actual sport. That's exactly what happened with Ice Wars. Ice Wars came to the Wyoming Commission because we have a history of meeting industry at where it wants to be met. And saying, we'll help it if you will listen to our rules. And our rules are always about, you know, we've got to have medical people on staff. You have to have physicals, blood work. We want to make sure that the fighters are equally matched because in the end, it's about fighter safety. If you want a sanctioning body, it's got to be about fighter safety. So we actually came up to Ontario for two events, Ice Wars 1 and Ice Wars 2. And regulated that, and so Canada was the home to the very first sanctioned events there in Ontario, and now Wyoming will host the first in the U.S. Hmm. And it's Ice Wars 3, and we're real excited about it, and I think we're going to have a real great turnout, and a lot of people already wanting to be part of it.
So first of all, I had no idea that that Ice Wars had actually happened in Ontario, right around somewhere near us. I'm not even sure where in Ontario that would have been, but I'll figure that one out. I wondered, though, as I was listening to this, you're talking about the sanctioning bodies and all the rest. I wondered if you needed any kind of sanctioning bodies for this, because in a game of hockey, you don't need a sanctioning body if a fight breaks out. It's part of the game. And I thought, well, maybe as long as they're wearing equipment and wearing skates and wearing helmets, that you could just say, well, it's a hockey game and we're just carrying on the way a game would have.
What it's about is, and you're exactly right, it's not expressly illegal to host an event where you have only hockey fighting. What it's about is the desire to have, so you have these national ranking systems, you know, like a boxer will win his bout, and then it goes to a national reporting system, and then his official record is then stored between states and nations, and then you can always look, okay, well, this guy's 16-1, okay, well, this guy's 7-2. But if a sanctioning body isn't overseeing it, these athletes will never have their work put, their work recognized or that. So we are able then to upload all of the outcomes to places like BoxRec or a series of other MMA places that want to say, okay, well, this is where we're going to store the official records for these folks. But you're right, you can absolutely have this without a sanctioning body, and there's nothing illegal about that. It's just about recognizing it as an official sport, and that's what really what we're all about. If the industry wants it and they can provide for fighter safety, then we will come and help them with their event.
Who are the people who do this? I mean, are these all former hockey enforcers, or are these fighters who just put on skates and try and fight?
You know, you've got a little bit of a mix of both, but what you really got to see is that everybody's got a baseline in hockey. Because I assure you that Floyd Mayweather in hockey skates is, on hockey skates is not Floyd Mayweather. You know,
no.
You have to have maybe a couple of decades, you know, just on a pond and, you know, at a local rink and figuring it out. Here in, I'll tell you, so in Wyoming, we don't go out on the ice because, it, you know, you'll have snow and then it'll be 50 degrees the next day. And so you're going to fall through the ice. And then when I visited Minneapolis and worked there for 2 years in 98, 99 as an adult, people were driving. They were driving these big, heavy Escalades and Suburbans out on the ice. You could hear it cracking and everybody was fine. And I was super nervous. But I out here, I didn't have the opportunity to get on ice skates until I was invited to my son's birthday party when he was seven, and it was ugly. I had some sort of cone mechanism that I was working my way around the ice on. I had to use the walls all the way around, and and I fought MMA for 11 years. I fought in Thailand. I boxed. I've got decent game, but you won't want on skates. It's a whole nother world. So I would say that being a decent hockey player or a decent skater is fundamental to even the entry level in this sport.
All right, so walk us through this, because first of all, I mean, the fact that it's been around here, which again, I didn't even know about until you told me, so somehow it flew under the radar, but would also, I would assume, means it could come back and could get some traction around here. Is this, do you just do this in a hockey rink? Do guys skate out into the middle of the center ice circle of a hockey rink and everyone's there, or what do you do? What's the setup?
So the setup comes in. What they do is they put up boards and they shrink the size of the rink. So now you're talking basically between the blue lines, a little narrower, and then that also creates more seating then on the ice for folks to be watching as well as in the traditional stands. Two guys come out. We need to have it's weight classes. The weight classes now are between 175 and 205 because you have to have same size fighters. Same works with wrestling, boxing, MMA, Muay Thai. We got comparable size and then also comparable skill set. If you're 16-1 and I'm 0-4, you and I aren't fighting. That's not a safe fight, you know. So we've got to have that. So the two guys will skate to the center of the ring. You are in your complete hockey outfit, except for your no stick. You're wearing, and we were adamant about this for this, because some guys wanted a loose helmet. Then you have to wear the 3-ounce MMA gloves because we're not hitting a hand against the helmet, you know.
Yeah,
so
break your hand right away.
Just on a flash. And so now we're going to do two 1-minute rounds with a possibility of a third round for a tiebreaker, because it's fast, and obviously when everybody falls, they stand them back up. And so that's why we're limited to 1-minute rounds, whereas if you could have probably more ground game, you would extend that time. But like in an MMA fight, you got maybe a 3-minute round, but there's also some jiu-jitsu is taking place on the ground. And this is prohibited here. It's a stand-up, more like what traditional hockey fighting is, when it's down, referee splits them up, separates them, come back together. There's time left in the 1 minute round. And we score the round similar to the way you do all other combat sports. It's a 10-9 must system. Winner gets 10, loser gets 9 or less. If you really get blown out, you can lose, 10-8. But you can also lose points if you're persistently kicking out your mouthpiece. Some guys will spit out their mouthpiece to buy time. We might deduct a point. And now you're starting to, down a point before you even began the round, or at least very deep in the round if you keep spitting out your mouthpiece. So there's a lot of consistency that we brought to the sport from our years of what we've regulated, of course, boxing, bare-knuckle boxing, Muay Thai, kickboxing. We were the first place in the Western Hemisphere to regulate what's called Lethwei with David Leduc, and that's bare-knuckle Muay Thai with headbutts. And David Leduc has been on Joe Rogan. It's the biggest sport in Myanmar and Malaysia. We had 3.1 million streaming views of that because of how big it is in Southeast Asia. It's wildly big there. And I think there's a lot of potential for this sport. They've got good advertising, good excitement across platforms like yourself, platforms like Barstool, platforms. Tesla has some advertising for them. I think that this is going to be a pretty exciting thing to watch grow. I'm glad we're here in the infancy of it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of relieved in a lot of ways that you don't have a ground game for this hockey fighting thing.
Yeah.
Only because I've got this image. I've got this the beginning of Happy Gilmore when Adam Sandler talks about being suspended because he was the first player to try and stab someone with a skate. You got skates on. I'm not sure that rolling around on the ice is ideal for that kind of thing. It is a pure hockey thing. But so where does this go then? What has been the... Obviously, there are people who are fans who want to come out and watch it, but what has the feedback been? Have you heard a lot of people say this is grotesque, this is taking the worst of hockey and turning it into something celebrated, or is it primarily something you've heard mostly positive about?
Well, I'll tell you, we all live in a myopic world, and we all are in our own echo chambers, and unfortunately, because I'm the combat sports commissioner and I come from an MMA background, and participated, I see a lot of excitement. Now, I do acknowledge that there will be people who will not like it, but that's just like one of the most wonderful mentors I ever had in my life was my soccer coach, Tim Dennison. We won some state championships, and I tell people he doesn't make soccer players, he makes men, and he's a practicing Buddhist, and he don't go to any of the events. So it doesn't appeal to everyone, and I acknowledge it doesn't appeal to everyone. But that's true of every sport. Not everybody watches, football on Sunday, and not everybody's tuning into the World Cup this week. But there are a good slice of us who enjoy combat sports in general, and then some people who just like hockey fighting. There are people who do like hockey fighting and love to, like to talk about Bob Probert and some of the great goons of
right.
the past.
Yep.
And, for them, they'll come out for the novelty of that. But I like to see combat sports grow because it helps other combat sports. There was a fallacy that boxing said early on that they said, if this MMA comes up, it's going to steal from us. But it turns out that MMA really brought back a lot of boxing recently and really brought a lot of it's famine thinking. And the reality is when I share what I have on my plate, we all actually have more. And that's the way I think combat sports grow. So I'm excited to see just people interested in it because some kid might go to, one of these ice wars, one of the hockey fighting events, and maybe someday he grows up to be a great traditional boxer because that's what he got involved in and was in a sport and had friends and had community and all the things that come along with that. And so it won't be for everyone, but it'll be for the right folks, and I hope that they enjoy the evening.
That is Brian Peterson. He is the guy, he's the commissioner, the Wyoming MMA commissioner, and the guy behind Ice Wars out there, and maybe back here one of these days soon. Now, Brian, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
Now, thank you, brother.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode, and also be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.